The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everyone? It is game day. The San Jose Sharks are back at it, and this is one that they need as Nashville has leapfrogged them in the standings in the wild card. If we look at where things are on this, the morning of Tuesday, March 23rd, the San Jose Sharks currently sit at fifth in the wild card, a point back of Seattle. They are 3 points back of LA, 5 points back of Nashville, 10 points back of Utah. Then we look at the division. They are 7 points back of Edmonton, 8 points back of Vegas, 12 points back of Anaheim. So if the San Jose Sharks want to get things rolling, it would serve them well to walk away with a win tonight against Nashville, a team they are trying to chase down. Some of the news that is coming out of morning skate today, per Sheng Peng of San Jose Hockey Now and NBC Sports California, we are seeing that Alex Nedeljkovic will get the start, and we are going to see Igor Chernyshov back in the Sharks lineup. That was confirmed by head coach Ryan Warsawski, and again, that's per the reporting of Sheng Peng. We've got a lot to talk about with the San Jose Barracuda, who continue to play some great hockey, as we are now joined by the play-by-play voice of the Barracuda, Nick Nolenberger. Noli, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ted. Yeah, we're getting down to the final part of the season, 12 games to go for the Barracuda. So it's been an awesome year. Team's in a great spot in terms of playoffs. It's been a lot of fun to watch this team call these games. And yeah, doing great. Looking forward to the postseason because the Barracuda are in a good spot right now. It looks like they will be in the playoffs. It's just now a matter of where exactly they're going to be seated when the season does come to an end.
Yeah, I mean, what, 2 points out of second in the Pacific and 5 points back of first place, right?
That's exactly right, and some games in hand. So they've got games in hand on both Colorado, who's in that second spot at 82 points. The Barracuda have 80 points in 60 games. Colorado has 82 in 62 games played. And then Ontario sitting atop the division. They've got 85 points in 62 games. So the Barracuda have a couple of games in hand on the two teams above them. They don't play Ontario again. They played them 8 times before the turn of the new year. They do have 2 more games coming up at home against Colorado. So there's some ability to gain ground at least on one of the teams that they're chasing.
I think what really amazes me is that last year it felt like there were more points at which there were cool down periods, the, you know, ups and downs. But this year it feels like the team has been pretty consistent. Like there haven't been those extended cooler periods. Does that track with you?
100%. It's been really incredible just the consistency of this team. The group has dealt with a lot of injuries, whether it was Cam Lund, who is out for the year, Ethan Cardwell, who's out for the year, Shane Bowers, who's kind of a utility guy who plays in the bottom six, is out to at least, I would say, beyond the first round of the playoffs, all got injured in about a week and a half span. The forward position got a little bit banged up, to say the least. The back end's been relatively healthy. And despite all that, the team just continues to find ways to win games. You know, getting Laurent Brossoit in the trade from Chicago back in January has been a huge lift for this team. He's 11-2-1 with the Barracuda since joining the team. He's a proven NHL goaltender, at the very least as a number two. And at the AHL level, I wouldn't say he's been just taking games over, but he gives this team such a confidence. He's a guy who's played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's had a long career, over a decade long, a professional experience. And we've seen it. And we've seen it spill and bleed into the rest of the team whenever he's playing games. So that's been a huge boost. I think these young guys have taken big, big steps. You get past the halfway point of the year and you no longer call the rookies rookies because they've experienced a lot. They kind of know what the AHL lifestyle is like in terms of travel and the cadence of games. And they've gone through some trials and tribulations. So it gets to the point where things are pretty cohesive. And we've seen the Barracuda just continue to roll. They're 7-3 over their last 10. They've won 3 in a row, 5 in a row at home. And their only little blemish was last weekend in Tucson. They lost back-to-back games. Aside from that, you can look at the last few months, and they've just been extremely consistent and are one of the very best teams, without question, in the Pacific Division. But I think they're one of the best teams in the league.
Tell me about the balance across this roster, because I think one of the more interesting things that was pointed out to me the other day that the highest scorer for the team is Philip Bystead, and he's 31st in the A right now. Like, that's, you would think that a team that would be right there towards the top would have somebody in the top, you know, 15 scorers at least, but that's not the case for this team. I mean, clearly they're figuring out ways to get it done across the roster, multiple contributions, and finding ways to win.
Yeah, and I think you give credit to Mike Greer, what he's done over the last few years in terms of building up the prospect pool, but also filling it with some middle of the row guys, if you will, recallable assets, whether it's a Patrick Giles or an Igor Afanasyev, who's not played in the NHL, at least with the Sharks yet, since he came over from Nashville's organization a couple of years ago. Middle guys, a Jet Wu, who they acquired from Vancouver right before the deadline, a physical type of guy who won a Calder Cup last year. They've got high-end prospects, whether it's Quentin Musty or the aforementioned Cam Lund or Kasper Halton, and go down the list, Philip Bystead, of guys who hopefully will impact the big club one day, but they've got a really good mix in the middle as well, and then they've got a great group of veterans. And that's what you have to have in the AHL. You've got to have all three phases. You've got to have good young prospects, usually have to be drafted pretty high. You've got to have players kind of in the middle who are pushing for NHL opportunities, have played some games, but have been mostly in the AHL. And then those veteran guys who predominantly spend their time in the American Hockey League, understand their role, still are pushing for an NHL chance, but understand their role and their value with the AHL club. And I think the Barracuda just have a tremendous balance of that. They have balanced scoring. Their penalty kill really, really struggled in the first, I would say, month or so. It was at the bottom of the league by a long margin. Since that point, I want to say it's over 90%. It's been just outstanding. Now, it had to do a little bit with changing in personnel, different faces with this team, a little bit of a tweak in terms of approach and philosophy with the penalty kill. Once it found its stride, the power play has been one of the very best the last 2 years. And Cagnoni is kind of, I would say, the straw that stirs that drink. They had the number one power play last year. They've got a unit this year that's kind of hovering around one or two. So special teams has been awesome. Penalty kill is outstanding. Power play is as good as it gets in the league. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, there's lots of different guys pulling the rope. And to have that type of balance, I think, bodes well for this team that hopes to make some noise come playoff time.
Are you surprised that Cags hasn't gotten that run with the Sharks this year, considering some of their issues, A, with the power play, and B, with just defensemen overall?
It's interesting because he's been so good. Last year kind of came out of the scene, not, I wouldn't say unexpected, but there was a question on whether he'd go back to junior and start his pro career, and he was just too good. It was too hard to deny his ability, and even pushed, I think, I don't know if he really realistically pushed for an NHL chance last year, but he was in camp for a long time. And that's, I think, a sign of what the organization, the brass, thinks of a player when he sticks around training camp for a long time with the NHL team. He ends up coming to the AHL, just had a brilliant year, and he's had a great season this year. I don't know if the numbers are as gaudy as they were last year. It's hard because you get into your second season and you have so much success in your rookie year. You just expect, I think, as a player to pick right where you left off and continue to roll. And Cagnoni's been brilliant. Don't get me wrong. He's got over 30 assists. He continues to just be productive. He's so dynamic on the power play. But for a guy of his size to make it to the NHL, he's got to continue to refine his game. And it can't just be simply power play specialist. And I think he does a pretty good job for being a smaller guy with his body positioning, his stick. He's extremely intelligent, thinks the game really, really well. Is not a burner when it comes to his skating ability, but he's so fluid with his ability to walk the line and get back, kind of swivel the hips. There's a lot of things that intrigue you. From my standpoint, if he got called up to the NHL and got a real run on the power play, that wouldn't surprise me. And I think he'd be successful. The fact they have not called him up and have stuck with the veteran D that they have, and then, of course, some of the young guys like Dickinson, I'm not overly surprised there as well. And I think you can take a little bit of what Mike Greer said following the trade deadline with Cags. He's had a great year, but I think last year might have expanded the expectations, if you will. And he's a player that was drafted in the mid rounds, and it's just going to take him some time. I don't think there's any issue with him continuing to marinate at the AHL level. Because he's not a finished product and he's got to continue to round out his game. So if he had gotten called up, long answer, if he had gotten called up, I wouldn't be surprised. The fact he hasn't got called up, not overly surprised either. I think the Sharks are going to work through the D they have this year. And then next year, when there's going to be a lot of jobs to be had, we'll see if he can steal one.
a lot of people are waiting to see if one of those jobs is going to be taken by Quentin Musty, which I imagine it will. And he's had some great hot streaks this year, and it seems like he's evolved a lot as an individual. I just talking to him this past summer for the prospect camp, it seemed like he grew up overnight. Just in, not that he was immature previously, but it just seemed like he had made that transition in his life from being, you know, a kid to a man, which is funny because he's still so young and, you know, in my eyes, in many ways, still a kid. But it seemed like his outlook had really changed. And, you know, he's never, you know, been the guy who was making the demands of, oh, I need to be called up, I need to be here. It seems like he's just been going about his business and playing some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, he's really come alive as of late offensively. He's putting the puck in the back of the net a lot. It seems like every game he's able to score. He's got all the skill in the world. He had some ups and downs, I think, like any young player would in their first season. And what the AHL provides, it's a great bridge for a player to get used to the professional game, whether it's the travel or just the demands that are bestowed on these players on a daily basis from the coaching staff and the expectations. And there are pressures too, right? When you're a first round draft pick, what you will be and how quickly you can get to the NHL. But I mentioned this to you earlier in the year. I spoke to him preseason and I asked him just about being with the Barracuda. And he was in camp for a long time and what he thought of that. And he was very, I thought, mature with his answer, just saying, I'm a young player. I understand this career, hopefully it's a long career and things don't have to happen immediately. Mm-hmm. Me developing my game, growing as a person, growing as a player in the AHL is not a bad thing. And hopefully long-term it's going to pay a lot of dividends for my career. And I just thought it was a pretty mature response to that question. And you're exactly right. I've seen a ton of growth from him too. And for somebody who has to move across the country, he's from Buffalo, playing the OHL, he's now on the West Coast, he's living on his own, he's understanding what it takes to be an adult away from the rink as well. Now, they take care of a lot of things at the rink in terms of food and nutrition mm-hmm. and scheduling, but they still have to sort some things out in their own personal life. And I think you do see that from young players where they can take huge steps in just how they carry themselves and their demeanor because they're learning to be an adult. Not to say he wasn't prior, but we all know when we went to college or we left our houses that we grew up in and we were on our own, how much we learned in that first year. So yeah, I've seen a ton of growth from him both on the ice and away from the ice. And again, he's got all the skill in the world. He's a dynamic offensive player and it's been fun to see his game continue to round out just like the rest of these young players.
What was your viewpoint of the Nick Leddy situation? Because I have always been very appreciative of how professionally he was in handling the situation. You know, he clears waivers. He's a guy who's played, you know, well over 1,000 games in his career. You know, he's been there, done that, seen it all. And it just seemed like he was just ready to go right back to work and take care of his business. Obviously loves the game. All my interactions with him have been more than pleasant. He's always reading a book, which I appreciate that about him as well, because our society needs more readers. But, you know, what were your expectations versus how that went before he eventually did get his chance again?
The whole situation was a little bit unique because he was skating with the Barracuda, not playing games, and didn't really get a ton of clarity on why he was not playing. And ultimately, I'm sure there was some discussions that were had, but he had a great attitude in the locker room. It's funny, as you'll see, Ted, with these different teams, they usually have pools when it comes to March Madness or the Masters, and they've got different little things going on in the locker room. And I'm looking at the photos one day because everybody had a little headshot. And I think this was for the Super Bowl squares. So every player, every staff member, had their little headshot on this piece of paper. And I'm looking and I'm like, who is that guy? He's wearing aviators. Looks like he's outside. And it was Nick Leddy. And he had not played a game. He had been with the Barracuda for 3+ weeks. But he was part of the guys. He was part of the group. And I thought that was a really cool thing of a player like that. No matter what the situation was, no matter what was discussed behind the scenes on what the plan was going to be, the fact that he came in with a good attitude, he has so much experience, he's a Stanley Cup champion, he's had an incredible career. And every player, for the most part, goes through this at the tail end of their career where they're at a crossroads. And maybe it's a shot to their ego. They think they can still play at a high level. They believe they should be in the NHL. But guys who are able to come into a situation like Nick did and have the attitude he did, and I think the approach, just it tells you about the character and tells you about the person. So play the one game with Acuda, had to play a game to be able to be recalled, plays the game, and good for him. He's found his way back into the Sharks lineup a little bit since sitting out for, what, month and a half plus? Yeah. So good for him.
For sure. Expectations for this team. I know last year, you know, you get past the first rounds and, you know, you up against a tough team in Colorado in round two. What is the thought on how deep of a run this team can make this year? Because I know that maybe they don't have some of the big names that they had last year. Nobody's going to win an MVP, I don't think. But it does seem like this team just has more balance, more experience, more potential maybe than last year's, whereas last year was about kind of reestablishing where the team was.
Yeah, it's. I think the sky's the limit with this team. I mean, it maybe, as you mentioned, is not as top heavy. You do not have the MVP. You've got more of a balanced attack. But when this team plays within its identity, and that's playing with pace through the neutral zone, that is pressuring pucks, that is getting pucks in deep and getting in on the forecheck. It's, as the great Drew Amendo referred to it, tying into a little bit of what John McCarthy has told us, he calls it boring Barracuda. And it's not a shot on the style of play, but it's the most effective approach. When they play that way, they are hard to beat. And the times in which they lose games usually is when they get away from that approach, when they get away from their identity, or they fall into penalty trouble and the bench all of a sudden is shortened and things get a little bit wonky and all of a sudden the game slips away from it. When they play within themselves and they play to their identity, they're extremely hard to beat. It's incredible. I said this to Drew the other day, maybe more so than any team I've watched in my time with the Barracuda. When they play the way the coaching staff wants them to play within that identity, It's as effective and tangible as you will ever see. It's been incredible to watch. When they play that way, just how effective they are. When they get away from it is when they fall into some trouble. So I think if they can play to that identity, they're going to be hard to out in the postseason. And I think they've got a chance to really make a run here. You never know, because injuries play a factor. There's lots of external factors. Depending on the opponent, the AHL is interesting too, where things shake out in terms of where you start series and all those things. Last year, the Barracuda going into the second round with a lower seed, yet they hosted the first couple of games. So it's kind of wonky in that way, but certainly the potential is there. The depth is there. And you've got the goaltender too, in Laurent Brossoit, who is certainly capable of taking a team on a run.
What are your thoughts for the Sharks heading into the game against Nashville tonight? I know that you will be on NBC Sports California pre and post with our good friend Alan Hoshida.
Certainly feels like a must win for the Sharks. I mean, I don't think I'm going out on a limb in saying that. They're 5 points behind Nashville. They do, I believe, have a couple of games in hand, fighting for that wild card, that final wild card spot. And I was talking during our broadcast the other day with Drew, and for the Sharks, you can say they've got to win this game. They've got to find ways to start winning games consecutively. And they've dropped, what, four in a row now. You just can't afford to do that this time of year. So fortunately, the Pacific Division has been interesting, to say the least. Everybody's kind of allowing for hope to still be had amongst a lot of the teams. So a win tonight, and all of a sudden, I you're right back into it, right? And you've got some games in hand, and you'd be back within 3 points. So, yeah, it feels like a must win in my mind. It should be fun. We'll see if the Sharks can find a way to get it done.
Noel, you're the best. Have a great show tonight on NBC, and I will continue to check in with you on the Barracuda, and I hope that we're getting to do some expanded deep Barracuda coverage into the playoffs this year, as last year two rounds was not enough. It was fun watching that team go, so I hope we get a lot more this year.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ted. Always fun hopping on. And yeah, great chatting. We'll talk to you soon.
Again, that is Nick Nolenberger, the voice of the San Jose Barracuda, joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network on the buildup as we get ready for game time. They're in Nashville today. It is a 5 o'clock go time, 4:30 pregame right here on the Sharks Audio Network. And this is big for San Jose. And this is what we could have hoped for at the start of the year, that when it came down to the end of March, that the Sharks were still playing in meaningful games. This, by definition, is a meaningful game because they are trying to track down a team that is in front of them in the wild card race, of which the Sharks are most definitely a part of. Then they go out on Thursday at St. Louis, Saturday at Columbus, finally back home on the 30th against St. Louis, And that's the first of six where they are home. So this is a big, big stretch for this San Jose Sharks team. We are all out of time. I'll see you on Morning Tide. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.
Oh, that's a good block by Sherwood. Knocked the puck away. Down the right comes Wennberg moving in. He's got Orlov. Score! Dmitry Orlov jumping up into the play. Gets a perfect pass and tips one in for his second goal of the year. Sharks 1, Oilers 0.